For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with a weekly look at the world of non-league football. It's the fourth and final qualifying round of this season's FA Cup, and the excitement is not just for those 64 clubs taking part in the 32 ties. There's plenty to test the wits and brawn, as well as a skill this weekend, as we take a look at some of those who may be nabbing the headlines come Saturday evening and Sunday morning. First up, it's the man in the know, the man with a flow of stats and insight into the greatest cup competition in the world. It's at FA Cup Fact Farm, Mr. Phil Annetts. He's on hand to throw some light on the previous meetings, the previous histories, and general quirks of those aiming for a place in the first round proper. Manager of this season's team of the competition so far has got to be Carl Jarrett at Mask United. In five games in this season's FA Cup, they've kept five clean sheets, as well as scoring 20 goals, which is more than any other club so far this season. The Step 4 club has something of a local derby with a visit of a Step 2 Gateshead, and they're surely ready to compete and cause a potential cup set. Next up is manager at Chertsey Town, as well as being a big fan of her own Dave Anderson, who isn't. He's the one of the team who won the FA Vale 3 seasons ago with them. He stepped up to player manager and has seen the side progress at Step 4, unbeaten this season in the Isthmian League, as well as the FA Cup, where they head to a Southend United side in turmoil this weekend. All that alongside a longer commute than even some of the other management commutes we've learned about this season. Fuel crisis. What fuel crisis? Rounding off the show, non-league paper, senior writer David Richardson on the National League, the FA Cup, and the many managerial changes in non-league this week. Much to come. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So let's start the week with a familiar voice, in fact, a fairly famous voice nowadays as well. It's FA Cup weekend once again, and it's the fourth and final qualifying round, 32 ties, and there's some corkers in there. We'll chat with two of the managers involved in it a little bit later in the show, but for the stats, facts and magic of the FA Cup, there is only one man in the know. It's a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show 2 at FA Cup Fact Farm, Mr. Phil Annetts. Welcome back, Phil.
Hi Tim, it's always good to be back.
Yeah, I feel like one of those guys at the fairground or something. You know, sort of place your bets, please. Place your bets. Roll up. roll your tennis balls along the line. But there's more than tennis balls. I mean, there's 32 ties, 64 clubs, yep. And I'm not sure. Even if you and I had picked it out and sort of tried to line up these ties, we could have done much more than what we've been presented with. It's the ties. They're full of intrigue. There's potential for cup sets and hopefully many stories that to come 5 p.m. on Saturday evening.
I think there is. I mean, it's amazing that there's only three ties that involve all National League sides. When you consider how many clubs have entered from that level for only three of them, so. That means there's a lot of opportunities to cause an upset against one of the big boys in non-league.
Yeah, and even of those all National League ties, Barnet Boreham Wood is a tasty affair in any weekend.
Yeah, I think so. Good local game there. I mean, they'd love, if they can't raise their game for that game, then they never will. It's fantastic for that to happen. And Barnet, of course, they're competing in the FA Cup for the 100th time, so it's milestone season for them, and they'd want to make sure that they do well. But yeah, you're right, all the National League, all National League ties are big affairs, and the Yeovil Weymouth one, a derby in its own right, is the most common tie of the round. They're meeting for the 9th time in the FA Cup with 4 wins apiece, so there's a lot of history between them, and an opportunity for one of them to take the lead again.
Yeah, and in the other All National League tie, and you know, I bow my titfer to Mr. Tony Incenso many times a week, and I'm sure you do as well, Phil. He did call this one a local derby, Wealdstone, Dagenham, Redbridge, which I think is probably pushing the London connection a little bit, but these are the ties between clubs that are at the same level, and they're this exciting.
Yes. I mean, and Dagenham and Redbridge have won both previous meetings in the FA Cup, so Wealdstone will be hoping to make this third time lucky for them. They have a lot of history being two major non-league clubs over time, and so that's probably where the sort of derby in inverted commas comes from, because they do play each other quite a lot. So it's a it should be a very interesting game.
Yeah, and I mentioned that we come 5 p.m. hopefully on Saturday evening we'll have plenty of stories, because all the games, of course, taking place Saturday. One early kickoff for the BBC iPlayer Red Button game. Bromsgrove Sporting against Grimsby Town, 12:30 p.m. kickoff. Again, no real surprise that they've gone for that one.
Well, yeah, there were several that could have chosen, of course, but Grimsby Town riding high at the top of the National League, only a non-league club for the first time in a while, after coming down last season, playing at Bromsgrove Sporting, who never been beyond the first qualifying round before this season. So they're in complete uncharted territory. And I know, obviously, Bromsgrove Rovers was a big name in non-league over the years. But, this is a good disparity, but with a great opportunity for the cameras to witness an upset. Mm-hmm.
And now we speak with the managers from Mask and Chertsey later on in the show, both of which have got cup set potential, haven't they? Anything you can give their managers to pin to the dressing room wall ahead of those games?
Well, I think for Mask United, they've done all the talking on the pitch over the last few rounds. I think they've played 5 games in the competition this season. They've scored 20 goals in total, with only Jersey Bulls having scored more. And they are yet to concede, which is a phenomenal achievement to get this far and not to concede anything. So they'll be very keen to keep that intact. And they obviously won 4-0 at Chester in the past round. So Gateshead from the same division should be doable for them. And for Chertsey, well, they're in complete uncharted territory. They're 54 campaigns before they finally got to this fourth qualifying round. And their opponent, Southend United, have not had to start this early in the competition for 97 years, so they're in unfamiliar territory as well, and obviously they haven't adapted to life in the non-league world as well as they might have thought. So yeah, who knows, that they could themselves cause a bit of a surprise on Saturday.
Yeah, we could almost go through every single one of these ties, couldn't we? Plenty of others, the potential cup seats. A club that I know well and have watched grow over recent years, Bedfont Sports. I think it's their first ever fourth qualifying round tie, again from step 4. They host, well, the mighty Kidderminster Harriers, and now a step 2. But, if Bedfont Sports was to get a result there, that would be one for the record books, I'm sure.
Yeah, a definite scalp for them. I mean, Kidderminster, former Football League side. They have been as far as the 5th round of the competition in the past. And as you said, Bedfont Sports are in this round for the first time, but on the back of a couple of seasons where they've been setting new best runs. So for them, it's like every season goes by, they have a better season than the previous one. So it will be fantastic for them to win. It's going to be challenging, of course, but they're at home, every chance when they're at home. And if Kidderminster get distracted by the airplanes coming to land every 2 minutes, that might be an opportunity for them.
Yeah, come 5 o'clock. You know, normally if I'm there, I'm looking for a sunset with a plane coming down or something like that. But I mean, if they're in that game by then, I don't think there'll be anybody looking for planes coming over by then. Also down south, another one that maybe at first glance doesn't look like a potential upset. You've got Bowers and Pitsy, the Isthmian Premier, hosting Aldershot Town of the National League under new management. Of course, we spoke to Mark Molesey at recent weeks on this show. Now, the big boys here, they've not had the greatest of records in the competition in recent seasons.
No, that's right. I think they got through to the second round a couple of times in recent times, but on the whole, yeah, it's not been a great form for them. And Bowers and Pitsy are another club who are, peaking in terms of their FA Cup experience. It's only the second time they've got to this round and not yet made it to the first round proper. And again, it's the home advantage that you've got to think, is that going to be enough to see them through to the first round for the first time?
I'm saying that game after game, look at the first one that was pulled out, Marine against Wrexham. Marine are used to the media coverage, not just on this show, but from globally from last season's run. But yeah. I mean, you're almost disappointed that it's not in the first round proper. It's not on mainstream terrestrial TV as a live game, because it is one of those mouthwatering, I think would describe it well.
Mouthwatering indeed. And Marine have got a fantastic recent record in the FA Cup, as we know. They've won 11 of their last 12 FA Cup ties, which is a phenomenal feat for a non-league side. And yeah, they've been paired with Hollywood Wrexham, and that would normally attract the TV companies to try and cover the game. And you're right, if it had been a first-round game, I think it had been guaranteed to be shown live. The clubs have met in the competition before, but not since 1946, where Wrexham were 5-0 winners. So it's a long time for Marine to have to wait to have a chance to avenge that, but I don't think they'll have a better time than now in the current FA Cup form they have.
Well, I'd imagine if you're a Marine fan, you have long memories, so there may be some that do remember that one. Looking down the other ones, I'm going to be looking out for the result as this one comes through. Dover Athletic against Yate Town. Now, my side, Hayes and Yedding went down to Yate Town earlier on in the season, and they gave us a good game, a great little setup there, and developing. I think Yate Town. In the West Country, I guess they're a side to look out for in the coming years. I think they're going to develop well. And Dover are having such a difficult season deficit they had to start in the league. So they'll be desperate for some success in the FA Cup, but also probably don't want to be distracted too much from the league.
You're right. I think for Yate Town. Of all the teams to get from the top flight of non-league, Dover Athletic was probably the one to pick out with a chance to get a scalp, a top-level scalp under your belt. And of course, they're playing in Dover, so that will be a challenge in itself. And you're right, you know, it depends on whether Dover see this as a nice distraction or an opportunity to get a winning mentality. But yeah, great chance for Yate Town to make it into the first round.
Yeah, and another one that I've got there is Torquay, Havant and Waterlooville. You know, two very experienced managers, Gary Johnson and Paul Doswell, pitting their wits in the dugout. It almost has a 0-0 written all over it because, you know, but I'd imagine that neither manager would be happy with that. So it's... if I had the opportunity, I'm not even sure what game I'll be at. I'm going to be at Dorking Wanderers against Hazen United, of course. But, you know, otherwise, I'm not sure where I go. I know you've chosen your game for Saturday, though. Where are you heading?
Yeah, so there are a plethora of options, and there are still many that I would pick from. You know, if it'd been spread over the weekend, then I'd have definitely gone to more than one. But I'm heading down to Harrow Borough to see them take on Chelmsford City. So it's only a step three versus step two, but still an opportunity to see a lower level team take on a higher level one with a chance of an upset of its own. And obviously Chelmsford have got a bit of history in the FA Cup and looking to try and rekindle some of the old form that they had in the competition. So that should be a fascinating game to watch.
Yeah, now... I suppose we must mention the stat of last round because you were there at Kettering Town with their record-breaking number of goals, and they're obviously going to be hoping to add to the tally this weekend too. I guess explain to the audience what that record was, and is there a stat of this round that we should be going away with under our cap, ready to bring out on Saturday?
Yeah, well, the both of those things involve Kettering, as it happens. So Kettering Town scored their 900th and, critically, their 901st goal in the FA Cup over the years in their 2-0 victory over Leamington with, I think his name is Isaac Stone, scoring the goal that took them ahead of Tottenham Hotspur, who had made it up to 900 in the last season. And had taken the crown from Kettering as top scorer in the overall competition. So it's fantastic for the Poppies to regain that record, and they've been making big noise about it, and quite rightly too. But they've got a game against Buxton, who are on good form themselves in the next round. But Kettering, along with Yeovil Town, are the two clubs that have made it to the first round the most whilst they were non-league clubs. So both of them are looking to extend that record. And if one wins and one doesn't, then they will become the team with the record of most first-round appearances as a non-league club.
Brilliant as ever on those stats, Phil. A slightly different approach this year regarding the draw. No one show. I make no comment on there. Instead, we've got a 1:05 show, I believe, on ITV on the Sunday afternoon. Now, as somebody, a club who has had to deal with the arrangements of a home draw in the first round of the FA Cup against league opposition, I have to say that extra 31, 32 hours or so, it's going to make actually a hell of a lot of a difference to many of people that are going to be put in a stressful but enjoyable situation once that draw is made.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's good that it's happening so soon after the games. As long as all the games have been played, that's the way it works. Sunday afternoon, nice to ITV have got it. I'll actually be there at the draw watching from behind the scenes. So that's an exciting time to head down to Wembley to watch that. And yes, you've got that extra day or so to prepare yourself for what potentially could be a big champion EFL One club that comes to visit in 2 weeks' time.
One thing we've not spoken about yet on this show, Phil, and something that you're involved in, the Generations Cup. Do you want to let everybody know about that and see if we can get some publicity behind that?
Yeah, so the Generation Cup is a cup that's been set up, or a tournament that's been set up to commemorate the 150th anniversary of the FA Cup, and in particular to commemorate the clubs that participated in the first ever FA Cup. So they've collated nine clubs that are affiliated with those clubs that took part in 1871-72. Clubs like Maidenhead United, obviously, and Crystal Palace with their affiliation with the Crystal Palace that played in those days, and Hitchin and Upton Park and the Wanderers and the like. And it's called the Generation Cup because it's designed to involve teams that are made up of people who are both young and sprightly and who are past their peak, if you like, for want of best. So they have to have a mixture of over 50s, people between 30 to 50 and under 30s in each team. And this night they've got a couple of semi-final weekends and a final weekend. So that it's all happening on, I think, the 31st of October at Hitchin Town, which was one of the grounds that we used for the very first FA Cup games. So there'll be a sort of three-way knockout tournament at Hitchin on the 31st. And then on the following weekend, there's games at Reigate Priory doing a similar sort of thing, a three-way knockout, with a view that the top teams that come through from that will end up to play a final close to the date of when the very first final happened back in March. The 11th or around that time, 13th, and that will be taking place at St George's Park. So a fantastic venue to host the actual final of that tournament. So if you can get down to Hitchin on the 31st or Reigate in November, then please do that and support this competition.
It's almost like Christmas come early, isn't it? This is non-league football and history combining. It's like for you and I, this is what we get up for in the mornings. but Phil, something else you get up for in the mornings, obviously compiling all these stats, creating your FA Fact File a website and that. Just before you go, just remind everybody where they can follow you and find out about all the current and future FA Cup Fact Files.
Of course, you can follow me on FA Cup Fact File at FA Cup Fact File on Twitter to see my updates on a regular basis. You can visit my website, facupfactfile.co.uk, where you can also pick up a copy of my FA Cup 150 book, which is published to celebrate the 150th anniversary of the competition. And I also submit blogs onto WordPress, facupfactfile.com.
Brilliant stuff as ever, Phil. Have a great weekend. Say hello to everybody at Harrowborough from me, and we look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. Good luck for Hazen Yedding.
So, one of those preparing for this weekend's fourth qualifying round. A massive day in our next club's history. Saturday, a sellout already by the time we're recording this on Thursday. There can be sure to be a record attendance for the Step 4 side hosting the Step 2 side in this one. I speak, of course, of Masker United, taking on Gateshead this Saturday. And to tell us more is a welcome to the Non-League Football Show, to manager at Masker, Carl Jarrett. Welcome to the show, Carl.
Welcome. How are you doing?
I'm good, Carl. Now, I mentioned a massive game, but it's a really exciting one too, isn't it? I spoke with Bob Ryan of your club earlier today, and he's one of those that does so much work behind the scenes, you know, keeps the club ticking along. And it was as if Christmas had come early for him. Not the financial rewards, but the just sheer excitement of a game like this and hosting it at your ground.
Everyone pulls together at Mask United. You know, over the last few years, we've grown bigger and stronger as a club. We've had some good cup runs in the last couple of years, and unfortunately last year when we got knocked out at this stage, it was away at Brackley. So we haven't had this for a while, and obviously it's getting a home draw against South Shields, which was a big game, and then getting drawn in the next round against Chester at home, two big draws really. So we're getting used to it. So it was great to get another home draw against Gateshead. Like you said, it does help in the finances side of things, but I just think the full excitement of the village itself, you know, it is only a fishing village, and I think the population is about 8,000 around there. So everyone's pulling together and working hard, you know, for this day.
Yeah, you mentioned getting beaten at Brackley Town there this time last term. Does the hurt from that help inspire you that extra 1 or 2% this time round?
Yeah, we didn't really know a lot about Brackley last year. You know, we knew we'd gone quite far in the cup competition and got to this stage again. But Brackley were playing really well at the time. I think they were second in their league, the same league as what Gateshead are in. And it was a long trip down there. The COVID side of things was all in the round, so the preparation was as good as what we possibly could get at that time. It was behind closed doors, so there was no fans there. It sort of didn't help us, and it wasn't excuses. They were very good on the day. Obviously, it hurt us when we got knocked out, and you do learn by like sort of mistakes. Not like you're going to get everything right all the time, but the last two games against South Shields and Chester will help us with our confidence as well going into this game against Gateshead.
Yeah, that last round, that replay win against Chester certainly grabbed all the headlines. And those are the sort of games that they build teams, don't they? We talk about, you know, yeah, there needs to be a team mentality amongst clubs to go on and have successful cup runs. But it is those sort of results where really you were up against it, but you came out the winners.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone expected us to go and win that replay, if I'm quite honest. In and around, even some of the fans, you know, because realistically, when you look at where they are full time, you know, playing at their ground on a Tuesday night, everything was going against us on the date and with preparation. You know, the coach was late, we got to the ground late, a couple of the lads got lost, didn't get to a 7:15, you know, we kicked off a 7:45. The warm ups and that were delayed a little bit, they were rushed a little bit, team talks were rushed a little bit, but then the lads have rolled their sleeves up, gone and got out. And got us the result we needed, so it's fair play to them, you know. But like you said, it's the togetherness of a group that we've got there that's to win these hard games for us, and they've done really well on the night.
Yeah, and all that excitement on the back of that win, on the excitement, I say, you know, Bob and the others around the club, there's a certain buzz that I feel around the club. But I guess as a manager, you've got to try and capture that, but also contain that excitement in a positive way, because what you don't need is too much over-exuberance and early yellow cards for silly challenges.
Yeah, true. Yeah, you've got to keep your lads' feet on the ground. It has been quite hard, but from my side of things, you know, my head's been switched on to games coming thick and fast. You know, we played one Saturday. We only played one on Tuesday this week as well. So my concentration was on the league, which is our bread and butter. And realistic, we've got a training session tonight. So we've just been putting our thoughts together on Gateshead, you know, since Saturday last week, but obviously not thinking about the game until after Tuesday night. So we've been putting our thoughts on that for the training session tonight, and hopefully getting the lads' minds ready for Saturday and get prepared now from now onwards. So try and keep them all right. And, you know, we want to try and create an atmosphere at Mount Pleasant so that the crowd are behind us. And we obviously, you know, we're the underdogs on that day, and we've got to try and work as much as we can and try our hardest to get this win.
Yeah, I think the record attendance previously is 1,489 against the reformed Darlington back in February 2013. I'm sure that's going to be beaten with the crowd on Saturday. But a big crowd, though, is that another peculiar thing for the players that you've got to sort of maybe get inside their heads? Not all of those people that are going to be there are going to be supportive of the home side. That's a slightly different atmosphere from what you'd normally experience week in, week out.
Yeah, it is, from week in, week out. But there's a lot of lads that I've got signed on for me, obviously, that have been and played in big crowds. I mean, I've got Darlington's ex-captain, Kev Burgess, you know. I've got the Whitby's ex-captain. I've got Adam Boyes, who's played for Spenny. Craig Gott played for Darlow and played for Spenny. They've all been around and they've all played at big crowds and big grounds. And obviously ourselves, you know, we had the two semi-finals not so long back against Stockton. It was over 1,600 at each one of them. You know, the last cup game against Chester, you know, there's 1,000 there. So they are pretty used to it. And I'm hoping that to step up to, you know, because of the crowd that's there. And I do believe, you know, I would have thought that there's at least 70% that'll be supporting Maskin there. And, you know, you do get used to, obviously, opposition fans coming in, travelling around since we've gone up the levels and gone to, like, the Liverpool, the Manchester teams. You do get used to it a little bit. But, you know, I'm hoping they'll step up on the day.
Yeah, you mentioned that FA Vards semi-final against Stockton Town. The you know, losing out on aggregate must have been harsh. But
yeah,
big games don't come around that often for most non-league clubs. But you do find that once you start collecting them almost, it start making a habit of it and success does seem to flow. I mean, is that your aim, I guess?
Well, the aim is like I spoke to the lads on Tuesday night, our aim is to actually be playing at this level that we're going to, you know, and what we played against Chester. But being a realistic chance, first of all, to get into where South Shields are, that, you know, that level there, level three, where the Morpeths are, that went up from us. You've got your Whitby Towns and your Scarboroughs. You know, I've got a collective group of lads that are good enough to play that level, some even higher. So our expectations this year are promotion. That's the foremost thing for us. So for me, it's, you know, we're going to have to get used to these crowds and get used to play at these levels, because that's where we want to be as a club.
Yeah, and you're certainly showing great form in the Northern Premier League Division 1 East. Just one defeat from the opening, what, nine games you've had. Four clean sheets in the league in September, I believe. I mean, is the FA Cup then maybe a bit of a distraction? Because the league does appear to be your priority.
Yeah, it is. But like I said, as a manager, I take every game as it comes, and I don't set everything out to say, you know, we can drop something here, drop something there. I'm going out to win every single game we possibly can. You know, I believe that the team's good enough to win most games in the league. You know, we come across these, your Gateshead, your South Shields and your Chester and your Cups. You know, you do your homework and you prep as much as you can. And, you know, you're playing teams at the upper level. You're giving that respect, understanding that you're going to be playing these. But you've got the relish of chance to go and play against someone that's higher, you know, and try and beat them. And so that's what we've got to do. And, you know, going back to what you said, I think we've played about 14 games at the beginning of the season. We kept 12 clean sheets. You know, we only conceded on Tuesday night for the first time in 9 games. So we've got a great home record. We haven't been beaten over 2 years at home. So it won't be all just there you go. And they won't be giving it, you know, on a plate on Saturday. They'll have to work hard for the win.
Yeah, I think, you know, the mind games come into these sort of matches as well. And
yeah.
I mean, this is step two against step four. But, you know, though some people might be looking at this and actually looking at your home record, looking at your league record, your form throughout the season. In the FA Cup, 5 games in the FA Cup already this season, 5 clean sheets in the competition, plus you're the top scorer to 20 goals. I mean, in some people's eyes, you're the favourites for this game.
Yeah, a lot of people in their area, yeah, a lot of people know, because this is not far from being, you know, a derby game, basically, from Gateshead to Mask. You know, we could have been down south anywhere or something like that. But I look at the in and around, I know most of their players know our players. So it's going to be quite tasty, and you're all right. A lot of people will look at our record of what we've done, and it's fair play to everyone that's involved, like I said, at the club. You know, the players more than anyone, and the management and the committee, all the volunteers, they've all stuck together on these days, and, you know, they've got us all going. And like I said, the crowd have got behind us, and we've played really, really well. We've got our preparation right on teams, and the lads have worked hard to do what they've done, you know. So as a compact unit, we are very hard to break down, and we do score goals, as you can see. So we're very good in both boxes. And I'm hoping that carries on Saturday, you know, to make it a hard game for Gateshead.
Yeah, we've mentioned on off the field, and I couldn't really get you on without a mention of the loss this week of the long-serving former kit man Colin Gilbert. We often talk about the non-league family at clubs, and I'd imagine there's a grief in the death of somebody like Colin that affects everybody at Mask, even on exciting weeks like this.
Yeah, Col was a great bloke. He's been at the club. Do you know what? I don't even know. I think he's about 40, 50 years. He's been at the club. He's been going since he was a kid, and he took over the kit lad. He must have been a kit man for at least 30, 40 years. He was a genuine bloke, you know. He loved Mask. He was still going to games even when he retired. So all his face was around the club in the village. Everyone loved him. So, to be fair, it's a big loss for the club, yeah.
Yeah, and a big loss to non-league as well. We talk about volunteers week in, week out, and they're just so important to us. So you mentioned there, yeah, you are just a club in a small fishing village, shall we say. But you've been at the club for a long while now. Now, I do remember reporting, was it a three-day wobble back in 2015 where you sort of left, missed a game, came back. You've clearly got ambition. Is the club capable of going further and meeting that ambition?
I think so. No disrespect to the club. If it wouldn't have been, it would have been one of them things that I would have had to look at myself and, for my personal things, what I wanted to do. My ambitions, like I said, I want to be as high as I possibly can as a manager into these levels of level two, level one, wherever I can get to, I've just turned 50, so I've got plenty of time under my belt. And the club at the minute now, the match and what I want, I'm very happy where I'm at the minute. The club's really trying to move forward. Obviously, the team's doing really well. And I only live 20 minutes away, so for me, it's a no-brainer for me at the present minute. I have a conversation with the chairman. He's really ambitious. He's trying his hardest to make us better off the pitch. So, I can only go off what's happening at the present minute and then assess things as things goes along. My contract's not up until next year, so I'll keep on doing what I have to do for Mask under contract.
Yeah, I can hear you struggling there. Before you came on, you said you've been struggling. You're coming back, fighting illness off and coming back, but still coming on the non-league football show for us. And obviously, a massive weekend ahead for you. But one last one for me. We now know that the draw for the first round is going to be shown live on ITV this weekend on Sunday at 1:05 in the afternoon. Win or draw on Saturday, you're in the hat. Where do you think you're going to watch it, and who would you want?
Oh, there's so many big teams in there, isn't there? I mean, for us, ideally, a local team up here would be, Sunderland would be huge for us to get someone like that if they're in that draw, to get them away from home or even at home, just for the finances side of things, the lads, the experience. You can look at it always, because these are the league teams that you'd like to get at home, that you'd have a chance to get through. But, yourself with the likes of Portsmouth and Wigan and Ipswich and Sunderland, them names, just even speaking like that, that's just dreaming. For me.
Yeah, and I said that was one last one. I've got one more as well. I'm turning into Dave Anderson now. Do you throw that as a carrot to the players before they go out on Saturday afternoon? You could be playing these guys in a few weeks' time.
I will be on Saturday, and tonight at training, I'll have a quick word with them just to let them know, what's there. I think they all know, they all footballing lads, they all watch the football completely away from football. So they all know exactly how important this game's going to be for themselves and obviously for the club. But you can't beat memories, can you? And if they get themselves into this first round proper, that'll stay with them for the rest of their lives.
Indeed. Carl Jarrett, the experience of speaking to you with your gruff voice and the excitement around the club will stay with me for many more years to come. I wish you luck at the weekend, and hopefully we will speak to you again before the season's out. And wish you best of luck for the rest of the season, both in the FA Cup and in the league.
No worries. Thanks very much.
So let's continue with the FA Cup theme and another side from Step 4, hoping that the biggest day in their history in this great competition will also end in a cup set. But for them, it's an away game, a trip across London and beyond to a side who last year were playing in the Football League. Former winners of the FA Vars Chertsey Town travel to managerless Southend United on Saturday. And it's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show manager at Chertsey Town, Kevin McLaren. Welcome, Kev.
Thanks, Tim. Well, thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to get you on. Now, of course, we both know Dave Anderson both very well. Or we did, because we've both been abandoned in recent years. I mean, your phone's probably as quiet as mine now, which has its benefits too. But I remember talking to Dave in that Vars winning season, and he'd retired before, but had said that it was his final season as a gaffer. And he only ever had you in mind as his successor, which I think says so much about you.
Yeah, I think me and Dave quite a close relationship in the season we worked together at Chertsey, but we'd always known each other. We had a couple of mutual friends, and obviously he was at Harrow and whilst I was at Hendon and stuff, so we were very familiar with each other. And then when we sort of began working together, we just really clicked. And I think we're the same type of people, and I think he sees a lot of himself in me, which was a massive compliment, really. But, obviously when he retired and stuff, I was approached by him, I was approached by the chairman to take over. They knew I was sort of, that's what I wanted to get into as I come towards the end of my career. But I was privileged to sort of take over the mantle. It's quite a big you know, a massive manager to follow, really. Do you know what I mean? Especially on the back of the bars win and stuff. But I like to think I've got quite broad shoulders, and I sort of relish the challenge, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you took over from Dave there on the back of not only the FA Vars win, but also, you know, you're stepping up to become player manager, and also that promotion back to step four. But then you get the pandemic and two aborted seasons. I mean, do you feel like you've had the job forever, but also like you've never had the job? You've only just gone into it.
Yeah, exactly. It's very much that is very, very, very much the case, really. I mean, the first season was going really well. I think we, it was us back on top of the form table, and we was right in the playoff spots. And for that to be sort of cut short with 10 games to go was a real disappointment. You know, we was in such a good place. And then obviously last season, I think we only played about 7 league games. And, you know, again, they started the season well. So, yeah, in a way, it might not have been a bad thing, though, because I've made plenty of mistakes within those two seasons. I've done some good things as well, but the learning I've had within that time frame has been brilliant, and I feel like I'm a completely different manager to when I sort of took over the job from Dave. Disappointing that we haven't been able to finish a season, but you know, I think we've all learned quite a lot from it. So this season for sure is sort of one we're looking at to try and get promoted in, and obviously have some good cup runs in both the FA Cup and the FA Trophy.
Mm. It's interesting you say that, you know, that you've been able to sort of adapt in that time, because the jump from being one of the lads to effectively being the dad of that dressing room, it's not always the easiest. So, you know, perhaps the pandemic and the issues it created has probably given you a chance to mould maybe easier into that role.
Yeah, I think also, like, when I worked with Dave, I sort of had that little bit of distance from the players because I was a player coach at the time. So that sort of helped me have that little bit of distance. I was always included in, like, the manager's meetings. I think the players sort of looked at me as an authoritative figure because he knew how close I was in and now how sort of closely I worked alongside Dave that season. So that sort of helped with the distance of it all. But, yeah, no, I mean, I've got a lot of people in that team who I've played with before at other clubs. And I've captained before. So I think straight away, I always had that respect to the players. And I think that played a major part in me getting the manager's job, actually, because they could see that the players listened to me, they respected me, and I had a good relationship with them already. So I've not found that an issue, to be honest. Yeah, the players straight away were very receptive of it. They sort of were very pleased that I had taken over from Dave. And we've got a special group down there. It's a special group of supporters. It's a special group of players. And it's important we sort of keep that togetherness and that close-knit family thing we've got going on down there. And I think sort of the club looked at me as a big part of that. So that side of it has been fine. The step up in levels sort of could have proved a bit of a problem, but we had a very good team. Do you know what I mean? We've got players who have played at that level and higher, players who have won that league before. So for us, it's just about adapting to having tougher games week in, week out in the Combined Counties League. We play that within ourselves a little bit, do you know what I mean? And that's no disrespect to that level, but the team we had was capable of playing higher, much higher. And then obviously once we stepped up, it was just getting used to, like, every team's a tough game, every team can beat you, getting back in that mentality of just having to be intense and on it every single match. So that was the biggest challenge.
Yeah. Dave often talks about this, about, yeah, the importance of your team around you, and that's why I always spoke so highly of you. You know, having an assistant, having a coach, someone that can take some of the pressure and sort of give you a sounding board as a manager. Have you been able to sort of build that sort of team around you as well?
Yeah, I mean, you won't hear anyone speak higher of Dave than me. Like, as a manager, as a man manager and a motivator and everything on that side of the game, he was exceptional. But what impressed me most about him is he knew his shortcomings. Do you know what I mean? And he knew he needed a tactician next to him. He knew he needed a coach next to him. So he managed to build a very good management team there. So I thought when I got the manager's job, it was just in my interest to inherit that management team. So they were the first signings I made sure that I kept the assistant, Steve Hawkins, who's managed at this level most of his adult life. He's made all the mistakes I'm about to make, and he's just an excellent sounding board. The coach who was working alongside me, Nicky Bennett, you know, he's been brilliant. So we kept him in with us. And then I've added maybe one more to that. But it didn't really need it, in honesty. One thing Dave managed to do was get a really strong management team together. And it was a blessing in disguise, really, that I could sort of walk in and inherit them, the pair of them. And they was really happy to work with me. And to be honest with you, that side of it couldn't have gone any smoother or been any better. When I say, like, with Dave Anderson, for example, like, and I say, tactically, he's decent. Coaching-wise, he can put on a session, but he wanted us to be elite. So he knew we needed Hawkins, who is like a encyclopedia of football. And he knew we needed a couple of coaches in me and Nick to come and make sure training was as good as it can be. So, that was another thing that sort of Dave, you know, he's left a little bit of a legacy at the club in terms of signing me and the other management team, Steve and Mick and stuff. So that's still sort of credit to him, really, for that.
Well, yeah, we will be selling T-shirts for the Dave Anderson Appreciation Society in a few weeks' time. But I hear what you're saying.
Be fair, he hasn't been in touch with me as much. So don't feel too offended by it. I think I was hearing when he weren't at Barnet, I sort of was hearing from him every week because he's a nosy Parker. And then when he's actually working for a living now.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he turned up at Barnet, it was like, yeah, I'm National League now. So I put that one on the chin.
I mean, to be fair, fair to you, though, I mean, you've gone in there. I said we've had these two abortive seasons. I mean, you certainly seem to be working well, even this season. You know, undefeated, games in hand. If you win those, I think you'd go second, wouldn't you, in the Isthmian South Central Division. I guess it's the fixture backlog has been created by your success in the FA Cup as well.
Yeah, definitely. That is maybe, you know, I've had cup runs before at clubs and the fixture backlog does become a little bit of an issue, but we've got a very strong squad, so I'm not sort of fearing that or thinking that's going to play any part in our season. The point he's making there.
You've gone in there, you've been successful, really, haven't you? You just haven't been able to get to the end of it because we haven't had a season.
Yeah, no, like it has been. It has been successful. I don't like to sort of bang the drum too much for us and that because within the start of this season, we've had a couple of very disappointing draws. You know, our points tally should be better. We didn't have a great start to the season, even though we are unbeaten. But we just, you know what it is, we've got the balance right within the squad. You know, I'll take a little bit of credit for that, fine, because, you know, the recruitment this season, I think we've done really well on that side of it. But, you know, we have got a special group of players and 8 or 9 of them were playing in the last season. We've got a good win mentality down there. We know how to win football matches. We just, like I say, tons of experience throughout the squad. We're physical. We've got flair players. We can keep clean sheets. We can score lots of goals. It's just about getting that balance right, really. And I think that's one thing we've always managed to do down there, and make sure that the balance of the team is spot on. Yeah, we've got a bit of everything, really. So, the expectation from the club, like, we're on the back of the Vars and the Conway County, the club don't expect us just to make up the numbers in the league. They expect us to get promoted again. That's the remit. Mm. So, you know, a bit of pressure comes with a job. We ain't got, we ain't got the biggest budget in the league, but it's not a budget that you expect to be in and around it. So there's always that little bit of pressure. But like I say, we're all up for that challenge and we thrive on pressure, as was proved over the last few years. So it's sort of the success, although, okay, we look like we've been successful. We haven't done anything yet, really. You know what I mean? Let's talk at the sort of end of this season and we'll see where we're at. But it's definitely sort of like, for me, we can't sort of baggage them too much. We haven't done anything really. Do you know what I mean? We've got the fourth qualifying round of the FA Cup, which, you know, is the furthest club's gone in their history and stuff. But, you know, we've got, for me, success will be if we beat Southend on Saturday, that will be the first time I'll turn around to the boys and say, listen, that was special. Do you know what I mean? We've done something huge.
But I mean, humble as ever. I mean, this is your fifth game in the FA Cup this year. Wins over Lingfield, Erith and Belvedere, a great win over Chesham United, and Jersey Bulls as well. I guess you probably weren't favourites in the last two of those, which probably shows that, you know, your guys are at their best maybe when they're the underdogs. You look at the trip to Southend on Saturday. This couldn't probably be more perfect timing with your league form. They've had a torrid start to the season. This week, you know, manager Phil Brown, his assistant Craig Fagan, director of football Ricky Duncan have all relieved of their duties. You've got Jersey Town, as you say, never been beyond this round of the FA Cup in 54 campaigns. And then Southend United, because they've been in the Football League, they haven't even played in this round for 97 years. There's history to be made. I think you're pretty good at writing history. You know, do you go into it confident you can get a result?
100%. We believe we can do it. Don't get me wrong. It'd be my job to sort of prepare the players for what we're going to face on Saturday, which is a full-time professional team. And I think I've played in the first round or the fourth qualifying against professional teams probably four or five times in my career. I remember all the shot with Hendon. We went away there in the first round. Boreham Wood when I was in the conference. Went away there. Luton Town, I think that's a fourth qualifying. Hendon. And within 10 minutes of that game, you realise how much quicker, fitter and stronger these professional teams are. But once you get over that, and once you weather that first opening exchanges, the margins are tiny. You know, they really are. They're very small. And it'll be our job on Saturday to make those margins as small as possible. And like I say, once you get over the actual visible, wow, they look the part, they run quicker than us, they're very crisp in their passing, it's all going on around us. Once you get over that and you get through those opening exchanges, like Potter's Bar proved against Barnet a couple of seasons ago, it's a much of a muchness. The margins are very small. We have very good players in our team who can cause them problems. Don't worry about that. We've got very good defenders in our team who can keep clean sheets. And once that 30 minutes goes past and they ain't scored, you watch their crowd turn on them. Do you know what I mean? They're not in a good place. Yeah. And they might start forcing things and making mistakes and whatever. At the minute, they're, you know, we could look at them, Southend United, what they were at the minute. They're a poor conference team. So we'll go in there fully believing. Obviously, our cup run up to date, we've had the Lingfield game, we've had the Erith game, and they were banana skins, don't get me wrong, both away from home. Both of them teams going well in their league. We then had the Chesham game. I'm very good friends with the Chesham management team. They had a lot of players missing that day, I have to say. Don't get me wrong, still a very good win for us and a tough game. But I think if we met them in a month's time, it could have been very different. Jersey Bulls were special. Don't get me wrong. Like, I think to go over there and be the first team to beat them I think in their history. Yeah. Is that right? Yeah. First team, I heard something like that. But again, you got that formidability about them, like when we play Southend, almost with Jersey, because everyone had flown out there. And these are Jersey Bulls; they're up and coming. They haven't lost at home. Everything, 1,600 crowd. Once you actually got over that, there was a lack of substance there. They hadn't met a team like us. They hadn't met a good Step 4 team, a proper team who was sort of well organised and can offer a little bit more than the sort of Step 5 teams that have been going out there. Maybe we're a little bit more physical. Maybe we've got a little bit more experience in our team. We've got better quality in the final third. So the minute that happened, you could see they was a little bit rabbit headlights, didn't know what to do. So on Saturday, we have to really focus in on trying to get over the first 10 minutes of that match and their physicality, the quickness, the strength and all that side of it. And then once that's done, the margins will be small, and I've got a really good feeling that we can cause a massive upset on Saturday.
You certainly have set the stall out very, very well. I think I probably know the answer to this one. You're still very young, everybody's young compared to me and Dave nowadays, but you've got years ahead of you in management, but I sense you're enjoying it. Are you enjoying it as much as you'd hoped being a manager?
Yeah, it's peaks and troughs, isn't it? I think when you're on the back of big wins like the Jersey one, you feel like, oh, you know, I'm not bad at this, and this is what I want to do, and you're loving it. And then, I mean, I've got a couple of big decisions to make this weekend, so at the minute, it's like my head's spinning, and if you know you're feeling guilty about it, you're going to leave out, you've got to have a couple of awkward conversations. But you know, when it's all said and done, if you're winning more than you're losing and stuff, I do enjoy it, and I do enjoy putting on good sessions for the boys. I love to see the club after a win. I love to, you know, Chertsey, we get good support down there. We've got a fantastic clubhouse, and it's lovely when after a win you walk on, you see everyone drinking beer and singing songs, and you feel partly responsible for that. So yeah, I do love the management side. This season's tough for me. I'm living up in Blackburn. We moved up there around sort of March time. That's where my missus is from. We made a decision as a family to sort of go up there, but I'm still working down here, so I yo-yo up and down. So on Saturday night, win or lose, I'll be driving up north to be with them for a couple of nights, and then back down into work on Tuesday, ready for the Ashratel game. So that's difficult, you know what I mean? So I've got my own personal challenges, like with regards to the commuting and that side of it. But you know, whatever happens, like I'm really enjoying the management side of it. And, you know, I think like most managers sort of who go into it at this sort of age and at this sort of level, right? Obviously, you're looking above and stuff, but you have to go. You have to go and have success. So at the minute, like this season is just all about us getting promoted, really, and doing whatever we can in the cup competitions.
Well, it certainly sounds like you've got your head screwed on and heading in the right direction, Kevin. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and best of luck at the weekend and for the rest of the season.
Cheers, Tim. Appreciate it. Thanks, mate.
So rounding off the week's news, it's time to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers, our usual destination this time of the week, and it's a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Senior writer there, David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Good. Very excited about this FA Cup fourth qualifying round this weekend. We've spoken with Phil Annetts for some stats. We've spoken to the managers at Mask and at Chertsey. But to be honest, we could have spoken to almost every manager, as every tie is exciting and full of intrigue.
Yeah, absolutely. We were probably saying the same thing this time, like sort of last week, really, when we were previewing the ties in last Sunday's paper. You know, there was so much to go at, so many good ties, and it always does seem like that when it gets to this stage, because obviously the step one teams are coming in, but then you've got clubs at step three and four and even step five are still in it, trying to get into that first round. So it really does throw up some good ones, you know, top of National League going to step three sides and step four sides at National League sides as well. So it's always a really exciting weekend, this one, and definitely sets things up nicely going into the first round proper.
Yeah, as you say, the step one clubs in there, but the clubs from the other steps, well, I suppose to get to this stage, that they've won a few games, but they seem to be the informed teams. So, you know, 32 ties to report on this week, with no National League fixtures for you guys, the top tier all involved in the FA Cup. And one of those clubs, perhaps most thankful that they're involved in the FA Cup, is probably Alan Devonshire's Maidenhead United. They started with two wins at the start of the season, but haven't won in the last eight. Another defeat on Saturday at Altrincham, I think it was. But then they've got the FA Cup, and it's not an easy one for them either. Home to Hastings United, who beat Eastbourne Borough in a replay the last time out.
Yeah, not easy at all. The Hastings have ambition to climb up through the leagues from step four, where they currently are now. And you know, I'm sure they'll go there full of confidence. You know, I think you're right when you've sort of started out in the preliminary rounds or the lower rounds of the FA Cup, you know, you really sort of get that hunger for it quickly. And, you know, Cup football, FA Cup football, sort of different to league action. You know, it's sort of, you really have to go right to the end. You don't know what's going to happen. And that's why we love the competition so much. But, Maidenhead haven't obviously started well in the National League this season. They made some changes in the summer, but you know, I always think with Maidenhead is that you just can't really write them off at all, really, because you know, with a manager like Alan Devonshire, I think he's sort of throughout his management career with whatever club he's been at, he's sort of proved people wrong consistently. You know, he's never been working with the biggest of budgets or clubs that are full time or things like that. So you know, I tend to stay away saying anything bad about Maidenhead, because they usually go and prove me wrong.
A man off the field. I mean, it's very rare for us to be able to get an interview out of him. And, you know, I think I've known him for 25 years probably. And he likes his football, doesn't he? He just likes to try and get on with it and not the faff around it.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, Alan Devonshire, you know, a really sort of popular name, probably in football, really, for having played at West Ham and for England as well, of course. 65 now and still has that fire for being involved in football and football management. Great to sort of still have people like that in the game, really. And, you know, the players that he's brought through his teams at Maidenhead and at Braintree as well, shows the work that he's done. You can't ever sort of, you know, play down sort of the things he's achieved in the game, both as a player and a manager, really.
Yeah. I mentioned there's no fixtures at step one in the National League, but a sprinkling of fixtures at step two. You've filed that they're unbeaten in the National League North, and they could go top if they beat Gloucester City.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, started really well. I think, you know, Fylde were one of the favourites in that National League North division, they've certainly lived up to that start. Probably a little bit of a coincidence, really, that, you know, they could go back on top should they beat Gloucester. Of course, we're going so well last season under James Rowe and then Paul Groves when the season ended and they were top then. And now they've got the interim manager of Lee Mansell in place, having got rid of Paul Groves only a couple of weeks ago. So just goes to show sort of how quickly things can change. But FC Fylde going really well. Haven't lost yet in the league, and a win will take them back on top over Brackley, who've also started really well.
Yeah, and talking of managerial changes in the South, there's a few games nearer the bottom of the table, including Billericay against Slough Town. Billericay having appointed this week former Greys, Welling, Heybridge, or Dagenham and Redbridge as a caretaker, but boss Jody Brown this week.
Yeah, that's right. Jody Brown back in the game, having most recently been at Dagenham, where he was a coach under Peter Taylor, who was obviously now one of his league rivals at Welling. Welling, where Jody Brown once managed as well. But good to see Jody back in. He did a good job under sort of difficult circumstances at Dagenham when he took over there as caretaker manager briefly. Has obviously been out of the game a while, but you know it's given him a chance to reassess and look at things. Matt Badcock, our editor, spoke to him for this week's paper. So there's a few more thoughts from him in Sunday's paper about the job at Billericay. But you know, I think it's an attractive job. You know, a lot of people would have applied for that and shown interest in that. They've got a good setup there. The ground, is certainly one of the better grounds in that division. 3G pitch as well, and another 3G pitch sort of just outside the ground, which can be used for training too. So it's really good setup there, and I hope it goes well for Jody, and I'm sure it will once he's got his sort of feet under the table and has settled in there over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and that Billericay vacancy we'd already spoken about last week, and it's been filled last weekend. A new vacancy come up, the departure, not really surprisingly, of Phil Brown and his assistant Craig Fagan at Southend, and also director of football Ricky Duncan. He stepped down from that role. And we've also seen Chesterfield publicly confirm that they've had to turn down a formal approach from Southend to speak to their manager James Rowe. So I think I spoke with Matt last week about the difficulty of clubs coming down from the Football League and into non-league and having to adjust and understand what non-league football is about. And there are some differences, but not as many as maybe they all expect.
Yeah, I think so. You'd probably look at Grimsby and see them top of the National League, but with a manager who has won promotion out of the division in Paul Hurst, and you know he sort of knows what it takes. It sort of sounds a little bit sort of smug, really, sort of saying that, you know, non-league's sort of vastly different to League Two or the Football League. But, you know, I think there is an element of truth about it, clearly. You know, generally the managers who get teams up out of this division have done it before. And, you know, I think that's what, you know, clubs coming down from the Football League generally tend to need to have, or at least someone who understands, you know, the game at this level and has been there and seen it all, really. You know, obviously Southend, you know, six losses from their first 10 games is not a good start at all. You know, they went after James Rowe at Chesterfield, but, you know, I'd have been amazed if, you know, James Rowe left the Spirites for Southend at this stage, considering all that he's done there at the club, taking them from being strugglers down the bottom last season into the playoffs and now right up there again, challenging for promotion and look really sort of well placed and well set up to have a right good go at the title. So, I think, you know, Southend, that was maybe a bit ambitious of them to do that. But, you know, there's plenty of good candidates out there like Darren Curry and Neil Smith who they can go after. And, you know, I'm sure they will be looking at.
Yeah, and you mentioned there about, you know, managers having good pedigree and understanding the division. Yeah, at the time of recording, we've just learned of Mark Yates' departure at Stourbridge. You know, one winning 12 in the Southern Premier Central, so it may be understandable there again. But there's a man with a great pedigree from his time at Kidderminster, Cheltenham Town, Crawley Town, brief spell at Macclesfield, Solihull Moors. Sometimes, I think even the most successful managers would reluctantly agree, sometimes you've got to have a little bit of luck on your side as well, and sometimes it just doesn't work.
Yeah, well, exactly. I guess that just goes to show that, you know, it doesn't always work, does it? Obviously, Mark Yates was managing in the National League last season with Solihull, just sort of while their Step 3 division, you know, wasn't running, just to keep Solihull sort of ticking over before they made a permanent appointment in the summer in Neil Ardley. You know, and Mark Yates did a sort of really good job of steadying things there and turning it around towards the end of the season. I think they were certainly one of the informed teams in the National League at that time. But then, you know, I guess it just goes to show that, you know, sometimes it doesn't work. Like you say, you don't get that luck or things go against you. You have injuries and it can happen. You know, it's probably why in the game there's so few managers who everywhere they go they win consistently or why they stay at clubs and win consistently. It's you know, it's so rare. Sometimes it just doesn't work.
Yeah, and looking at the way that non-league is constantly changing and often for the better. Another big change this week, further down the pyramid at Leatherhead, Nicky Ball departing there, and they've got a changing system in the replacement coming in there. They've got football consultant Cush Joe Howell. He's overseeing the operational and logistical side, and an on-the-field team that have been successful at Clapton in the shape of new head of football Kaim Shahor and first-team coach Mustafa Bashkow. We've seen this higher up, maybe in non-league, maybe in the National League and that, but an interesting change of direction, maybe, for a club at Leatherhead's level.
Yeah, it is interesting. Obviously, Leatherhead have not started well, you know, bottom of that Step 3-ish min division, and maybe they just feel like they need to freshen things up a little bit and try a different direction. You know, it's a step up for the new guys coming in from Clapton, but and I think they probably had a little bit of a baptism of fire on Tuesday night when they lost 5-0 to Lewis. But, you know, that's very early days, and, you know, I'm sure they were barely had a training session at that stage, I wouldn't have thought. So an interesting one. You know, it's not sort of something you like you say tend to see too much at that sort of level. So it's one we're gonna have to keep an eye on and see if they can turn things around. But, you know, they may well view it as a as a sort of long term thing. But I'm sure that, you know, they certainly won't be willing to give up their step three status this easy, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to be the only club to go down that route as well. Yeah, we spoke with the Binfielder joint managers, Carl and Jamie last week, and when you're trying to look after a non-league football club as a manager, there's so many things that you have to do, so many pressures, and then you've got your life beyond that, where your working life, your family life on top of that. So in a way, it makes sense. The lower down you go, the more you spread the load with the number of people that are involved in that whole setup of running a first team.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, the football's becoming sort of so much more advanced now, really, in non-league at the part-time level in particular. You know, clubs are doing all they can to have a more professional model. I was speaking to Andy Wing, the Banbury manager, this week, and, you know, he was talking about sort of trying to make their setup more professional with GPS vests and having food after training on a Thursday night and doing some sort of pre-match stuff in hotels before games and things like that. And you know, it really is sort of moving that way. And I think, you know, managers and clubs feel if they can get an edge in any way, then, you know, it's worth doing it now, because you know, all rewards of climbing up the pyramid and, you know, things like the FA Cup as we see now are so important. So you know, these clubs really do take it seriously, and you know, certainly, you know, there may be sort of part-time in name, but, you know, these setups now are very professional when they are in on Tuesday and Thursday nights and before games as well. It's yeah, really is the real deal.
Yeah, well, it's even just, yeah, managing a side this Saturday in the FA Cup. We got seven subs. Well, that's 18 players. Back in the day, you had 11. You maybe had a couple of subs or something. Yeah, already just managing the number of people, just, I know we've got the benefits of text and WhatsApp and whatever like that, but you still need to talk to each and every one of those people. And you can't just give them all 30 seconds of your time every week. So I'd imagine being a manager must be have a bigger pull in your time than ever before. Almost like being a football journalist at the non-league paper, because you've already touched upon a number of stories you're going to write about.
Not sure about
that. Wow. It's not as easy as I'd like to make out. I've been there. I know. And actually, he says, just realising he's still got to finish his column that he was supposed to be writing for this weekend's paper. But plenty to read in this weekend's paper, including a column maybe from myself, if I can finish that one and send that over to you. What else can we expect to read in this weekend's paper, David?
Yeah, well, you've stolen my headline note there from taking the glory of your column there, Tim. So you know, I have to focus on the smaller bits now that you've taken that one from me. But no, like I said, Jody Brown in there, after his appointment from Billericay. I've spoken to Jamal Farfield at Boreham Wood, you know, who's trying to sort of help out younger players, really, in the game. He's big on mentoring and mental health, and you know, I think he's using his own experiences from within in the game to help others. So, yeah, I had a good chat with him. Also, as mentioned, Andy Wing at Banbury, who have started really well and are unbeaten. And talking of unbeaten, what about Risborough Rangers, who are currently 41 league games without defeat and going really well in the Spartan South Midlands League? I was speaking to Mark Eaton about that run. So, yeah, loads in there again. Obviously, all the FA Cup action as well. And everything from the leagues too. So yeah, really looking forward to putting Sunday's paper together over the next couple of days and seeing what shocks we get on Saturday as well.
And looking forward to reading all about them on Sunday morning in time for a 1 o'clock draw on Sunday afternoon for the FA Cup. David, as ever, always great to get you on the Non-League Football Show. Have a great weekend, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim. Look forward to seeing that column.
And that is it for this week. Thank you to all of my guests as ever. Thank you for everybody that is listening. Please do share it with your friends. Let them all know about us and you know, share it on social media. You can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. As ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom and on Apple Podcasts, but also now on Google Podcasts, on Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, GeoSavin, Listen Note, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, and via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football, thank you, and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.